We're working in the synthesis of yoga, the yoga of integral knowledge. We're in chapter 12, the realization of Sat-Chit Ananda, a concept which is precious and indispensable to Sri Aurobindo and his philosophy. He has noted that this knowledge that is sought is a knowledge of the essential principles of being, not merely the essence of being, the absolute, but the demonstration of that being through its self-empowerment in all the modes of its intentional becoming. So to Sri Aurobindo, Jnana Yoga would be that which exists in the supracosmic, but includes the cosmic, and includes, most particularly, the particular individual. All are part of one body of knowledge. Just to frame this a bit, the first few pages that we read last time dealt with existence and with existence as consciousness. Tonight, we'll look at the basis of consciousness and end with Ananda. So we'll have gone through his treatment of existence, consciousness, and bliss. This was written and published in November 1916, a few months earlier, in the first year of the Arya's publication. He dealt with, from April to July in 1915, with the pure existent, with conscious force, and with delight of existence, the problem, and delight of existence, the solution. So those chapters, from 9 to 12, in a sense, are a rehearsal of what we would see here in a brief compendium. So tonight we pick up with the paragraph that begins, Chit, the divine consciousness, is not our mental self-awareness. That we shall find to be only a form, a lower and limited mode or movement. As we progress and awaken to the soul in us and things, we shall realize that there is a consciousness also in the plant, in the metal, in the atom, in electricity, in everything that belongs to physical nature. We shall find even that it is not really, in all respects, a lower or more limited mode than the mental. On the contrary, it is, in many inanimate forms, more intense, rapid, poignant, though less evolved towards the surface. So note what he has implied here. He suggests that as we awaken to the soul in us and things, that the soul is implicit in nature, that it is immanent, that consciousness itself is immanent, spread through, saturating all forms, all modes of becoming. Whatever is, has some modality of consciousness. Whatever is has some soul force behind it, supporting it. This is one of the features of Sri Aurobindo's monistic philosophy, which is often overlooked, that for Sri Aurobindo, the soul has impact, has real force in the natural life, is not outside it, but is in it as an immortal principle. he's used this word poignant, which I think people often think means something like a winsome low ache in one's experience. But poignant does not mean that. Poignant from the Latin pungere means to sting. So an experience which is poignant means that it is stinging, sharp, acutely painful. But this also, he writes, this consciousness of vital and physical nature is, compared with chit, a lower and therefore a limited form, mode, and movement. So there is chit, conscious being, which is beyond all modalities, but all modalities reflect something or contain something of the movement of its conscious being. Chit is present in all things. These lower modes of consciousness are the conscious stuff of inferior planes in one indivisible existence. Inferior in the sense that one is at a lower plane than the other, not that it is less or unneeded or flimsy or repugnant or contemptible. No, simply that there is a staircase of existence. One existence, conscious of its own being, has deliberately deployed itself in these many planes. So we can say that one plane is inferior to another because it is a step here and there is a step there. But they are not, in a sense, inferior in nature, in essence, if you see what I mean. In ourselves also, there is in our subconscious being an action which is precisely that of the inanimate physical nature whence has been constituted the basis of our physical being, another which is that of plant life, and another which is that of the lower animal creation around us. So he describes here an evolutive continuum, a range of being which this consciousness renders itself more and more free as it climbs this staircase of existence. All these are so much dominated and conditioned by the thinking and reasoning conscious being in us that we have no real awareness of these lower planes. We are unable to perceive in their own terms what these parts of us are doing and receive it very imperfectly in the terms and values of the thinking and reasoning mind. So whatever experiences that we have, we reflect about them, we think about them, we're mentalizing them. We're no longer aware at the level of the cells, at the level of the pranic being. And even at the level of the mind, those parts of the mind which are not self-aware, which are in a sense submerged, are not available to us. But we receive their impulses, feel the movements of their jetties in our larger currents, but aren't directly aware of them. We receive it as the manas receives in the Sankhya system, the reports of the senses, and we organize it into a scheme that reflects what we think is a simulacrum of the world. And so we always have this self-constructed vision of what we're experiencing. We experience it, we mentalize it, and that's where we live. So we don't experience it directly. This, of course, is borne out by modern psychology and our examinations of the brain and its functioning, that we're in our rational awareness, a step behind what we're actually experiencing out there in nature, whether it's physical, emotional, or rational. Still, we know well enough that there is an animal in us as well as that which is characteristically human, something which is a creature of conscious instinct and impulse, not reflective or rational, as well as that which turns back in thought and will on its experience, meets it from above with the light and force of a higher plane, and to some degree controls, uses, and modifies it. But the animal in man is only the head of our subhuman being. Below it, there is much that is also sub-animal and merely vital, much that acts by an instinct and impulse of which the constituting consciousness is withdrawn behind the surface. Below this sub-animal being, there is at a further depth the sub-vital. When we advance in that ultra-normal self-knowledge and experience which yoga brings with it, we become aware that the body too has a consciousness of its own. It has habits, impulses, instincts, an inert yet effective will which differs from that of the rest of our being and can resist it and condition its effectiveness. Much of the struggle in our being is due to this composite existence and the interaction of these varied and heterogeneous planes on each other. For man here is the result of an evolution and contains in himself the whole of that evolution up from the merely physical and subvital conscious being to the mental creature which at the top he is. So he has studied here various levels of awareness, not direct, not awake the way the mind thinks it is, but physical, subvital, etc., etc., going up. You have here a sort of miniature picture of the chakra system, which answers to the kind of layering that he's describing here. So there is a rational that oversees the subrational or the infrarational as it cascades downwards to reach the physical basis. And many subdivisions within each. Sri Aurobindo, and the use of these terms subanimal and subvital, does not often return to this kind of terminology. He develops a different terminology, especially as he reinterprets and improves the life divine, which is where you finally get a constellated picture of the cosmos. But this evolution is really a manifestation. And just as we have in us these subnormal selves and subhuman planes, so are there in us, above our mental being, supernormal and superhuman planes. There, chit, as the universal conscious stuff of existence, takes other poises, moves out in other modes, on other principles, and by other faculties of action. So just as we have within us the whole tracery of the history of evolution arising from brute matter, instinctual life, single cell to multi-cell, to all the vibrancy of life and vegetation through the animal kingdom arriving at the human level. All of that exists in us as an expression of chit. But now Sri Aurobindo turns our view above to other poises which are beyond the mind, which are suprarational, which go back to the origins of being. There is, above the mind, as the old Vedic sages discovered, a truth plane, a plane of self-luminous, self-effective idea, which can be turned in light and force upon our mind, reason, sentiments, impulses, sensations, and use, and control them in the sense of the real truth of things, just as we turn our mental reason and will upon our sense experience and animal nature to use and control them in the sense of our rational and moral perceptions. Pardon me, poorly read. But you can see that Sri Aurobindo is suggesting that this is the supramental realm of existence. A truth plane, a plane of self-luminous, because it's like the sun, Surya, which shines upon all. Self-effective idea. This is Ritta Chit, the consciousness of self-ordered being, which is dynamic, which creates a beautiful and harmonious world there, in that realm which we call supramental. But just as we can impose the light of our mind upon the ranges of being which we have evolved through to get to the mind, so can this suprarational source of truth light impose itself on lower ranges of being. Sri Aurobindo wrote about this Ritta Chit in the Veda, the Rig Veda. It's the consciousness of essential truth of being, of ordered truth of active being. And the vast self-awareness in which it alone is this consciousness possible. So it is Satyam Ritam Brahat, the truth, the ordered truth, and the vast truth. There is no seeking, but rather natural possession. No conflict of separation between will and reason, instinct and impulse, desire and experience, idea and reality. But all are in harmony, concomitant, mutually effective, unified in their origin, in their development, and in their effectuation. So here in this world of light, this world of true being, Satyam, which becomes active as Ritam, there is an easy, harmonious perfection. Idea fashions itself into form and perfectly effectuates itself in concordance with all around it. By the way, the term concomitant from the Latin comitans or comitari means to accompany. So it means that the whole company is moving forward in harmony. But beyond this plane, beyond this truth consciousness, beyond this plane, and attainable through it are others in which the very chit itself becomes revealed. Chit, the elemental origin and primal completeness of all this varied consciousness, which is here used for various formation and experience. There, will and knowledge and sensation and all the rest of our faculties, powers, modes of experience are not merely harmonious, concomitant, unified, but are one being of consciousness and power of consciousness. So if the expression of chit at the level of the supramental is an ordered harmony of a multitude of powers stemming from this essential chit, when we get beyond that into the realm of chit itself, we are speaking of indivisible oneness. That is the primary experience, the founding reality. It is this chit which modifies itself so as to become, on the truth plane, the supermind, on the mental plane, the mental reason, will, emotion, sensation, on the lower planes, the vital or physical instincts, impulses, habits of an obscure force, not in superficially conscious possession of itself. There it is, self-possessed. And you can see he has described the chit flows without interruption through all these planes of conscious being. They may not be conscious of themselves, but they exist within the consciousness of chit. The supramental, the mental, the vital, the physical, all are modes. They are notes of being struck on the cosmic lyre and express a harmony that is contained ultimately in chit, which is real being. And if it plays all these notes, it plays it for the delight of being. And we'll get to that next. It is this chit. All is chit, because all is sat. All is various movement of the original consciousness, because all is various movement of the original being. So now we turn to the third term of Sat-Chit-Ananda. When we find, see, or know chit, we find also that its essence is ananda, or delight of self-existence. And of course, this is the chapter title, The Delight of Existence, the Problem, The Delight of Existence, the Solution. These two chapters, which are central to how Sri Aurobindo deals with the problem of theodicy, the problem of evil in the world, in the life divine. He's already spoken about it in those essays. Now he comes back to revisit it in the practical dimension of yoga. To possess self is to possess self-bliss. Not to possess self is to be in more or less obscure search of the delight of existence. And here is a clue, because if we are growing up through this evolutive process and trying to find what we really are, what we're really looking for is the unifying experience of unwalled delight, of bliss. It is ananda that we really seek. Pleasure, not ultimately satisfying. Pain, a mirage, because it masks a deeper experience. What is that beyond pleasure and pain both? What is the essential experience of self-aware being? Well, if this self-aware being is infinite, both in status of being and in depth of awareness, then the only experience it can have, essentially, is delight. beyond all categorization, beyond determination, its experience must be incalculable bliss. Chit, eternally, possesses its self-bliss. And since chit is the universal conscious stuff of being, conscious universal being is also in possession of conscious self-bliss, master of the universal delight of existence. This, of course, we hear echoed in the Taittiriya Upanishad a few thousand years ago. The divine, whether it manifests itself in all quality or in no quality, saguna or nirguna, in personality or impersonality, Ishvara or Brahman, in the one absorbing the many, or in the one manifesting its essential multiplicity, is always in possession of self-bliss and all bliss, because it is always Satchit-Ananda. For us also to know and possess our true self in the essential and the universal is to discover the essential and the universal delight of existence, self-bliss and all bliss. For the universal is only the pouring out of the essential existence, consciousness, and delight. And wherever and in whatever form that manifests as existence, there the essential consciousness must be, and therefore there must be an essential delight. The individual soul does not possess this true nature of itself or realize this true nature of its experience because it separates itself both from the essential and the universal and identifies itself with the separate accidents, with the unessential form and mode, and with the separate aspect and vehicle. Let's be careful. He is not writing here when he says the individual soul about the psychic being. He is talking about this process of individuation as it occurs in the externalities of nature, because he has already described in his sevenfold cord of being to us, and as he described in the delight of existence, that in the life divine, that the nature of our soul stuff is that it is a drop of bliss from that, from this sea of being that is Satchit-Ananda. And because that is all oneness and we are a drop of its conscious content here, it is towards unity, towards reestablishing that oneness in the experience variegated in front of us that we are always searching. So, let's make sure that we understand that the individual soul quote that he is looking at here is a figure of Prakriti, not your essential self. Thus, it takes its mind, body, life stream for its essential self. It tries to assert these for their own sake against the universal, against that of which the universal is the manifestation. It is right in trying to assert and fulfill itself in the universal for the sake of something greater and beyond, but wrong in attempting to do so against the universal and in obedience to a fragmentary aspect of the universal. This fragmentary aspect, or rather collection of fragmentary experiences, it combines around an artificial center of mental experience, the mental ego, and calls that itself. And it serves this ego and lives for its sake instead of living for the sake of that something greater and beyond of which all aspects, Even the widest and most general are partial manifestations. This is key. This is talking about how the workings of this prakritic personalized nature is reaching towards the establishment of the ahankara. In Sankhya Yoga, this term has absolute precision. It is the I-making feature of what is external nature. This is not what we are. And this I-maker is this collection of different strands and modes of being, identifying with their experiences, their favorite thoughts, their favorite aesthetic experiences, etc. And that the individual thinks to be itself. But that is not the real individual. And that is the being that must dissolve. That is what is thrown away with death. That, if we falsely identify with it, is what keeps us chained to a lower experience. That is why we seek moksha, nirvana, to escape thraldom to this phony self. This is not us. This is the living in the false and not the true self. This is living for the sake of and in obedience to the ego, and not for the sake of and in obedience to the divine. The question how this fall has come about and for what purpose it has been done belongs to the domain of Sankhya rather than of yoga. So to the domain of philosophy, where we count the various modes of being, etc., and say, how do we get from a mula prakriti down here to the gross physical senses? That's not the purpose of yoga. Yoga is aiming at reversing this trend and finding out what the real essential self is. We have to seize on the practical fact that to such self-division is due the self-limitation by which we have become unable to possess the true nature of being and experience, and are therefore in our mind, life, and body subject to ignorance, incapacity, and suffering. Non-possession of unity is the root cause. To recover unity is the sovereign means. Unity with the universal and with that which the universal is here to express. We have to realize the true self of ourselves and of all. And to realize the true self is to realize Satchitananda. What is it that takes us to the experience of unity? Yoga. Which yokes us to that which is real. It is an effortful path. It requires concentration and tapas. But we are delivered ultimately out of division into oneness. We are delivered from insentience to full awareness. We are delivered from a false representation of being to true being. Asatoma sadgamaya, tamasoma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritam gamaya. From darkness, from non-being to true being, from darkness to light, from death to immortality. So the Taittiriya Upanishad we call it the Bliss Upanishad has a line in its 11th chapter, it's the first verse. Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. He who knows Brahman as the real, as knowledge, as the infinite, placed in the secret heart and in the highest heaven, realizes all desires along with the consciousness of Brahman. One arrives at Chid-Anandam, as the Kaivalya Upanishad calls it. Consciousness bliss. You erase all desires, and then you enjoy all things. The Isha Upanishad. Renouncing, enjoy. When you are no longer the ego that thinks it has a claim over something, and you become one with the universal and one with that immortal being who transcends the universe, then you are able to move through the cosmos, finding every experience delectable, all things delightful, unmasking the disguised Godhead in every form, and seeing that essential conscious bliss behind every becoming. All is being. All is moving. All is. Or is it not? So we'll take up the 13th chapter next week. Since we're on the cusp of some changes, I thought this passage from Savitri might be apposite and interesting. This is in Book 1, the Book of Beginnings, in Canto 4, The Secret Knowledge. And we'll begin towards the bottom of page 53. He is ignorant of the meaning of his life. He is ignorant of his high and splendid fate. Only the immortals on their deathless heights, dwelling beyond the walls of time and space, masters of living, free from the bonds of thought, who are overseers of fate and chance and will, and experts of the theorem of world need, can see the idea, the might that change time's course, come maned with light from undiscovered worlds, here while the world toils on with its deep blind heart, the galloping hooves of the unforeseen event, bearing the superhuman rider near and impassive to earth's din and startled cry, return to the silence of the hills of God. As lightning leaps, as thunder sweeps, they pass and leave their mark on the trampled breast of life. Above the world creators stand. In the phenomenon, see its mystic source. These heed not the deceiving outward play. They turn not to the moment's busy tramp, but listen with the still patience of the unborn for the slow footsteps of far destiny, approaching through huge distances of time, unmarked by the eye that sees effect and cause, unheard mid the clamor of the human plane. Attentive to an unseen truth, they seize a sound as of invisible augur wings, voices of an unplumbed significance, mutterings that brood in the core of matter's sleep. In the heart's profound audition, they can catch the murmurs lost by life's uncaring ear, a prophet's speech in thought's omniscient trance. Above the illusion of the hopes that pass, behind the appearance and the overt act, behind this clockwork chance and vague surmise, amid the wrestle of force, the trampling feet, across the cries of anguish and of joy, across the triumph, fighting and despair, they watch the bliss for which Earth's heart has cried, on the long road which cannot see its end, winding undetected through the skeptic days, and to meet it, guide the unheedful moving world. Thus will the masked transcendent mount his throne. When darkness deepens, strangling the earth's breast, and man's corporeal mind is the only lamp, as a thief's in the night shall be the covered tread of one who steps unseen into his house. A voice ill heard shall speak, the soul obey, a power into mind's inner chambers steal, a charm and sweetness open life's closed doors, and beauty conquer the resisting world. The truth light capture nature by surprise. A stealth of God compel the heart to bliss, and earth grow unexpectedly divine. In matter shall be lit the spirit's glow, in body and body kindled the sacred birth. Night shall awake to the anthem of the stars, the days become a happy pilgrim march, our will a force of the eternal's power, and thought the rays of a spiritual sun. A few shall see what none yet understands. God shall grow up while the wise men talk and sleep. For man shall not know the coming till its hour, and belief shall be not till the work is done. She is waiting for us to do the work with her. Shall we join her? Much love. Stay well. I will see you soon. All the very best. Heart to the front. Soul in charge of the nature, into the world you go, conscious of your mission. Beautiful, sublime. Her children, I salute you. Namaste, Jai Ma.